Thanks everyone who joined us earlier. We wanted a brief sort of walk about the building. I realise that you probably have handed out blank snagging or defects to fill in as we did the walkabout. It's really great to be a building where you can come back as a member of the public. I guess as architects, so many of the projects we do, a set of keys get handed over and you have to spend some months detaching yourself from a project where you've maybe invested so much of your energy and so much of your time. This building's different, we're nearby. And despite the best efforts of the client, we get to come back and have our lunch here anytime we want. So I just want to talk today, maybe 15 minutes or so, about competitions. And maybe just offer a few thoughts. I'll show a few more images of the building. There isn't really time to offer any kind of a comprehensive view of it, but a few thoughts anyway on competitions. And we'll look at two projects. I'll of course show some pictures of the Mac, and I'll show you some images that deal with another project we're doing at the minute in Copenhagen. We're a small practice. When we won the competition for the Mac in 2007, there were maybe half a dozen of us. We've probably grown to twice that size since then. We maybe have one or two less at the moment. But we remain a small practice, and certainly when we won this project, we were very small. And I suppose maybe that's really the first comment I wanted to make about competitions, is a kind of question, I suppose, about why do we do them? Why bother? We recently sat down and tried to do a bit of a calculation on the number of hours that we typically spend to make a serious and kind of meaningful entry for a competition. That's somewhere in the kind of 300 to 400 man hours. We've never really managed to do it for anything less than that. On a few occasions we've managed to do it with actually a bit more. So it's a huge investment of your energy and a huge burden for a short spell of time that the office has to carry. And why put yourself through that? And I suppose there's two answers to that. It's two for today. One, I suppose, is just a kind of practical issue. We're small. We want to do projects that are big. Certainly in Northern Ireland, there's no opportunity for us to do that unless we compete through design driven competitions. We can't prove that we've done the work before because we haven't. So those kind of PQQs driven out of questions around turnover, three projects of a similar scale in the last 5 years, all of that completely denies practices like us from competing. So when open design competitions come along, we look at them seriously because they are one of really the only opportunities for a practice like ours to get involved in public buildings. So that's a kind of practical reason. Maybe the different kind of reason is more to do with the kind of architects that we want to be. And whilst we enjoy and get involved in a lot of very small projects, we want to do projects that change the way cities work. We want to do projects that affect places in a significant way. We want to deal with public spaces, public buildings, and in order to do that, we have to look to competitions as an opportunity. So from that point, the question for us becomes, which competitions do we do? Through the European Journal and various sources, whether it's the magazines or locally advertised competitions. We look to see which project is right for the office, and there are some projects that we just will look at very quickly and take a view that either through the looking at the judging panel, we take a view that our work isn't appropriate for this this set of judges. They're not going to engage with what we do, or we suspect or worry that they might not be. So some competitions are ruled out on that basis. Others are ruled in because of the kind of architectural opportunity that they afford. So with the Mac, I think it's a building type that we'd all enjoy and relish the opportunity to get involved with galleries, theatre, public space. With the Copenhagen project, it was a bit different. And it was a project that we spotted through the European Journal. All of the advertisement was in Danish. So we've learned how to operate Google Translate very well. And most of the brief and submission material had to be in Danish as well. So part of doing that competition involved grappling with a foreign language. But we wanted to get involved in it because it was a landscape project. And we thought that this was an opportunity to extend the office's ideas and thoughts on public space, public territory. Also, Copenhagen is a beautifully kind of retained historic city, and we were interested in engaging with a kind of iconic European capital that had that. That quality about it. So there's different reasons why you might not. But one thing's for sure, when you decide you're going to, the only certainty that we've learned is that you can't do them half-heartedly. You have to put in the art. So maybe just to talk back to that point about public space, public life. The life of the city. Again, folk who were here earlier, we had a very brief run through the gallery where the Lowrys are exhibited in this piece. I have to say, something of a revelation to me when I saw it a few months ago when it was first hung. But it's a tiny painting. I had a preconception that Lowrys were bigger. And this one can't be much more than an A4 size. But it's an interesting piece that we've been just talking about a little bit in the office. And we just are interested in the way that it describes this body of people. There's some architecture there in the background. It's a painting that seems to talk very beautifully about the occupation of space and how buildings in a way describe or draw a line around the way that people move or the way that people occupy spaces. We think, of course, as architects about containing space as a kind of abstract volume, or we think about space as a functionally driven commodity that needs to operate in a certain way, manage a certain function and so forth. But this painting, I think, is interesting because it, in a way, the weight or the presence of the people in the painting feels as strong a figure or as strong as the buildings do. So the photograph, just our office is in the building, sort of in the top right. Of that left-hand image, and here's crowd either leaving the shipyards in East Belfast. So we're interested in the kind of stuff that makes cities. With the map, obviously, we've been interested in how Belfast is made from brick. How can we add a piece to that fabric that has some sense of relationship to an existing an existing heritage of a clay formed city, but still offer something new that is connected to that view of the past, but also feels as though it deserves to get old. That's another theme, I suppose, that we talk about a lot in the office, is that we want to make buildings or places that have a right or look as though they have a right to get old. I think a lot of new architecture looks as though it needs to be cleaned a lot, or it looks as though it needs to be carefully kind of polished and maintained. We want to make spaces and buildings that you can imagine existing largely unchanged 100 or 200 years into the future. And we do, as a practice, I suppose, our library, we're as often reaching for a book on a, maybe we're reaching for a book by Schenkel as often as we're reaching for a book on Chipperfield's work. We look to the past as much as we look to contemporary architecture. And I was reading an Italo Calvino essay recently where he talks very persuasively about the past being a really our promise of the future. So any kind of ideal that we try to create now, our ideals are based on a kind of either an imagined or a perceived or understood ideal that existed sometime in the past. So maybe in terms of quite a recent history, the Mac is a building, I suppose, that feels as though it belongs a little bit to both of these images in a way. We're not trying to make something new completely. We're just trying to make a bit more of something that's already here. This is another crowd, another group of people, and it's a painting that Hugh Mulholland, who's been curating the current visual arts program at the Mac. It's a painting by an artist whose work he was showing a few months ago, Cassie Howard. And I've slightly bleached it out. There is a bit of colour in the original. But as our client knows, architects like to remove as much colour as we possibly can. But it's an image that has really haunted me since I saw it a few months ago, and seems to speak into this way that we've been talking about our work in the office as patterns that people make as much as spaces that architects contain. So here's a plan. It's very badly drawn. I scribbled this very late one night when I was traveling last year, but here's a plan of some tables and people. Here's more people, some more tables. And here's the plan of the Mac. So in a way, whilst of course the building defines the territory that's available for people to engage with, in another way, there's a sense that the occupation of the space described by users is as forceful and as important, as the fabric of the building. So this way of thinking about spaces is different from the traditional sense of a drawing that describes walls and a drawing that defines a plan. We're also quite interested in how this has affected a few of our other projects, and this maybe leads briefly into a way of talking about the project in Copenhagen. And a previous slide, little
dots are hieroglyphs were people. On this occasion, the dots are trees. And the large one is a, you know, sectional cut through a column for a statue. But we like thinking about our projects sometimes as a collection of points rather than a series of walls. So that previous plan of the tree trunks describes, you know, a planned section through this woodland. And that we won this competition in 2009. It's about halfway built on the site now. It'll finish in October, November. But it's what we love about it is that it's not a building at all. It's a landscape project. If you take the trees out of the project, the highest thing that we're making is at the height of a seat. And it's a project that is about understanding a territory in Copenhagen and imagining the way that people could or might move through that. Then we put a woodland in the middle of the space as a way of separating a busier commercial end of the site from another end of the site, which we want to become more tranquil and more reserved in its character. That's a very old part of the city. Do I have two seats? If you can just see in the center of that circle, the section of open space which widens. Well, that sort of long wedge-shaped space is the site for the project. And the old ramparts running up the screen, those have since been removed, and the, I suppose, the 17th, 18th century development of Copenhagen extended, you know, across the screen. And while we were looking at the site and looking at the project, we came across a very short story by Hans Christian Andersen, which we later discovered that most of the Danes that we've met had never, you know, weren't aware of. But it's a story that talks about a maiden who later in her life looks out of the window of a building, and she looks out over the old ramparts of the city. And the building that is the sort of centerpiece for this story is actually the building that looks over our site. So we don't know which window she looked out of, but it's one of these windows, and she's looking out over this space. So we presented this story back to the Danish judges as part of our competition process, and we showed them how that despite this building being the smallest one on the site, it's actually the oldest. And for us it was the most important because of its age and because of the connection with the Hans Christian Andersen story. So the motif or the kind of icon of this window became a way of laying out a pattern across the whole project. So this small, quite diminutive building in its context actually has the most significant effect across the whole landscape. And this is one of the bits of the project that gets to be 500 millimeters high, maybe. And inscribed on top of this plinth where you can sit is the story, written in full. And there are two plinths like this, and one has the story in Danish, and one has the story in English. And you can sit on this plinth reading the story with your back to those windows looking out over the square. So you have the connection through that Hans Christian Andersen tale to this new landscape. And who's to say which is older, the story the landscape, the stone, or the window. And we like that ambiguity of age, that we don't want our work to look deliberately new, nor do we want it to look artificially old, but we like it to become embedded and subsumed into the history of a place. So here's the here's the site. It's taken a few years ago, but you can sort of feel this sort of wedge-shaped space with the building called the Vartov, just in the background. You can see the column with the statue, which will now be surrounded by our woodland. There are 120 cherry trees, and they'll be planted this October. Here's just a couple of images. If any of you have watched the Danish series The Killing, anyone seen it?
Yes.
Well, the building on the left here is where Trolls got up to his kind of politicking. That's the city hall on the left. And, you know, whilst at the beginning of the project there are ideas about a story and a narrative, it's been a lovely project in terms of how we've been able to engage in a level of detail that, you know, is really quite humbling to be able to do. So we've actually been able to design the street lighting around the site. And it's quite a simple piece, really. We're working with this actual lamp fitting at the top. It's a fitting that's used everywhere in Copenhagen. They suspend these fittings on cables from buildings over the streets, rather than like we do here with street lights arched over the road. They suspend them on cables. You'll have seen that, I'm sure. So we've used that typical fitting, and then we've designed the pole and stand for it. And these poles sit in amongst the trees. So, sorry, I'm probably going on too long here, I'm trying to speed up a bit. So, from one kind of component or small piece of the building to another, and maybe going back in kind of reverse with the Mac, but you know, this is the building that we have loved to be working on as a young practice. You know, what more can you want than to do a public building like this in your own city? So we've really enjoyed every opportunity we have to keep designing, and it's hard to stop sometimes. But this is one of the benches for the galleries, and it's a very simple kind of folded steel detail, made locally. And here it is in one of the gallery spaces. There have been some very beautiful photos taken of the building. We're been very fortunate in that respect. Alan Jones has taken a few for us, which we're very grateful for. Some very beautiful shots. Donald McCann locally has taken a very beautiful set of images as well. And we commissioned another set from German photographer Christian Richters. And these are a few of his images. I'll not say much over these because I think I've run out of time apart from anything. But hopefully through these images there is they do speak back to that idea that, you know, we wanted to make something here that deserves to get old. In our minds, the tower, whilst finished a few months ago, for us, it's much older. It's been there. It was there before the square. It was there before
the developers decided how to carve up the land. For us, that tower is a kind of, you know, stake in the ground or a piece that seems to connect deeper to kind of geological connections. So it's older than the brick, but the brick building's also older than the square in our mind. So yeah, again, for those who joined us in the talk about earlier, we just got up as far as the fourth floor gallery. You can see the volume of the main auditorium here. This is the first floor level with the little sort of tables underneath that tall stairs and a little crush bar at the end here. I talked briefly about the surfaces on this block at the end of this slide. This is a very simple kind of rectilinear brick building, Belfast warehouse. We all know what that kind of building should be like and how that kind of building feels. The tower I've just talked about, it's older, it's more ancient, and it comes from a different kind of time. This piece, I suppose, is a bit like a kind of corruption or a distortion of that kind of Belfast brick fabric. It contains spaces that are largely windowless, apart from a few large windows where the gallery spaces are afforded a connection to the city. This form has a plant well on the top, a gallery and an auditorium. So it's very internalized as a block. And as a way of distinguishing between these two blocks, this one, when its brickwork reaches the external envelope, it stops, and the concrete structure of the form continues through the interior. You know, in converse, the rectilinear big warehouse block, it holds its brick and presents its brick to the interior. Here's some studies of the various kinds of surface building offers: brick, concrete, and stone. This rhythm of solid to void in the brick is very much about how big should a window be for that room on that floor. Should it be this wide? Yeah. But a floor down, maybe it's, you know, the same again, because they're serving different kinds of spaces. So that sort of varied sort of vertical pattern on the brick, it's not a forced kind of conceit. It's a product of what needs to happen between each panel of brick in terms of daylight to a certain kind of space. The stone and the concrete are different, and they are patterns or marks. In the stone, we wanted to offer the stone in two ways. We wanted to show it as a sheer kind of surface, like an obelisk, or that somehow that spoke to its perceived or imagined ancient qualities. But where the stone faces the new square, we wanted to make it work like a facade, so it has some modelling and it has depth that say something about the solidity of the material, and also allows that surface to become activated. As the sun moves around the square, that surface takes on a kind of modelling and a different kind of weight. The concrete then, I suppose, is the thinnest of these vertical kind of patterns. And we wanted to work with the tradition of board marking, but we didn't want to work with it in a kind of just nostalgic way and just to make a board marked shutter. We wanted to do something that felt as though it could address the tradition of board marking, but also would recognize the contemporary way that
concrete is shuttered. So there's a pattern that's actually repeated. I can't remember the number, but there's maybe four or five shutter patterns. They're all drawn. And these are placed and replaced, each one maybe getting three or four strikes before it's discarded. So it's a system that works with the old tradition of board marking, but also recognizes the kind of, I suppose, the modern practical issues around working with that material.
And there were a lot of drawings done of this, a lot of tests done as well. So behind some of the brick walls at lower levels of the building, if you could peel away the external brick and look into the cavity, take away the insulation, which we hope was there, you'd see a lot of testing of these patterns. Trying different woods, I think we ended up with sandblasted cedar was the recipe. So I'm just finishing off with a few more quick images that Christian took when he was over. Then finally, you've seen this piece. I think this is a moment in the building which we've enjoyed, particularly kind of probably an area we struggle with, because it's one of those bits in the building where the architect has to kind of let go of it. The piece is by an artist called Mark Gary, and it's a piece to commemorate the murder of Thomas Devlin. And it's a very subtle piece. His family wanted to commission an artwork that belonged in this building, and I'll not talk about the piece, it's not my kind of place to, other than to talk about how it is in the building. And it's got to the point now where we can't really imagine the space before it was there. And here we are without it. And now here we are with it. And each of these pieces is a tiny copper wire that's, I don't know how it's colored, but it's very beautiful.